if we actually take a step back and we look at change that happens over 10, 20, 30, 40, or maybe 100 years, I mean, it is remarkable what we're capable of as humans when we, you know, work effectively in teams through organizations.
Welcome to Leaders Unplugged. Leaders Unplugged is a real talk with the impactful, candid, honest, actionable, and fresh from behind the scenes. Presented by IMD and hosted by IMD's president, David Bach. I'm Felix Zeltner, journalist and founder of Remote Daily, and I have the huge honor to co-host this brand new format, sort of flying as David's co-pilot, taking you on a journey to leaders all around the world. A journey that you'll experience on this podcast, and you'll also have a chance to participate in live later this year. Today, for our inaugural episode, I met David virtually, and the first thing I asked him, he just came back from weeks of travel that took him from the Davos World Economic Forum to Dubai World Government Summit to Dean's Conferences in Las Vegas and Lisbon back to IMD's home in Lausanne, Switzerland. And, you know, David is not only focused on making IMD the world's most impactful business school, he's also a political scientist and Nestle professor of strategy and political economy. So I asked David first, share with me three things, three patterns, three takeaways that emerged from all the events and behind closed doors meetings that you were just a part of.
Clearly, number one, AI. The transformational impact of artificial intelligence on teams, on organizations, on industries, on societies. What does it mean for leaders? What does it mean for strategy? What does it mean for upskilling? So that was a clearly dominant theme in Davos in Dubai, and of course has massive implications for us in business schools. The second one was what's happening with the global economy. How do we reignite growth in Europe? How do we adapt to the slowdown of growth in China? How do we get our arms and our minds around this new wave of protectionism? And that, of course, gets me to the third, and that's, you know, Trump. I was in Davos literally on the day of the inauguration, and so much of the conversation was on the discontinuous impact of this new Trump presidency. And we're recording this now about 5 or 6 weeks later, and if anything, that discontinuous impact is felt more strongly now than it was even in the first couple of days of the administration.
Yeah, here in Austin at the South by Southwest conference that I just attended, there are futurists, foresight practitioners whose job it is to be informed or build scenarios for what's next, who are saying, I can't even keep up with what's happening tonight, between this morning and tonight. So it is really an interesting time. And I wanted to come back to the first point that you made, because you talked about AI and the impact on your surroundings, your peers, and you students. I'm sure you students all already use ChatGPT or Perplexity when they do research, maybe even under the bench when they're looking at their phones while you're talking to them. But what does it mean? Do you have like a concrete example, or can paint an image for us what this impact of AI that you were addressing, what that actually means for your business school overall?
So we're pretty excited about AI at IMD and how it's going to make learning more impactful. The most impactful learning is both personalized and interactive, right? That's what we do in our classrooms here at IMD. You know, our faculty, our coaches very much engage with the participants, tailor the learning experience around each group. But it's difficult to do personalized interactive learning at scale. Usually when you try to reach more people, it becomes less personalized or it becomes more one-directional. What is so exciting about AI is that it enables us to do personalized interactive learning at scale. So we're developing tools, we're developing AI-powered games that we think are going to enable us to impact more learners in more places and to make learning deeper. That's not the conversation that many of my dean colleagues have about AI. They're very concerned about cheating and academic integrity. And of course, that matters. Yeah. You know, here at IMD, of course, we have the good fortune that so much of our work is with senior executives. And so I think we're
They're not
further
as
along. Yeah, we're further along capturing So clearly we've given a lot of thought to this as well. And you know, our assignments have changed in our MBA program, our executive MBA program. But I think we're well positioned to think about the opportunities of AI when it comes to learning, when it comes to business school pedagogy. And I know that our colleagues are going to get there. I shared a few things that we do at IMD to inspire them to think about the potential and not just about the risks.
Do you think there's going to be an AI David soon that people can have maybe a personalized workshop with? I just saw Reid Hoffman, the founder of LinkedIn, in its AI version, giving a keynote at a conference.
Yeah, there is already an AI version of me, if you want to, or at least there is an AI version of a session that I've taught. So one of the things that we've done here at IMD is we've developed tools where you can take the transcript of a class and you add to it some articles that I've written or some slides that I've used in the session. You put it all together, and then you, Felix, could have a conversation with the content from that session after the session happened, right? And we offer this now in many of our programs so that our participants can continue learning after the session is actually over. And it's fascinating to see that people then might ask questions in a different language, or they might ask to have the insights applied to their industry, or they might ask the AI tool to quiz them on a couple of things that they have learned. So,
very cool.
So that's already here. Now, what I'm really excited about is a synthetic version of me that can just record amazing videos and maybe one day record amazing podcasts, but we're not quite there yet.
So far, it's still the real you. And I know you
That's what you think, actually. That is what you think. You don't know that.
Ah, oh, damn it. Well, I hope for it to be the real you, because before I saw your team, but it's all about the context, right? And I think in the future, we will have to have watermarks for video calls that show us, yes, you're podcasting with an actual human and not just with its AI version. But talking about humans, David, was there a moment, and I'm asking about these like behind closed doors moments that you went through over the last couple of weeks, was there a moment when you met someone that you maybe hadn't met before out of all the global leaders that you crossed paths with, where you said, wow, this was a person, when I think about leading us into the future, this was a person that really inspired me. And maybe you even had a conversation with them. I'm kind of asking for.
Yeah. Look, this was my first time here at the World Economic Forum and the first time at the World Government Summit. And I admit, like, I was a little starstruck, right? I mean, suddenly there's, you know, Muhammad Yunus, and there's, you know, Christine Lagarde, and, you know, you check in with Steve Schwarzman from Blackstone. You know, I mean, check in. I just walked over and said hello, and, you know, we both went to Yale and sort of quickly connected over that. I mean, I quickly connected with him. I'm not sure that he connected with me just as much around this. So clearly you have that, right? And just amazing policymakers, leaders, entrepreneurs, technologists, scientists. But it's sometimes these sort of unexpected encounters. So there was one moment when I was at the World Economic Forum in Davos. I was sitting on a bench or like on a couch, actually working on a few things in between sessions. And there's a lady sitting next to me. I saw that she arrived with a bit of an entourage, and she was giving an interview. And at first I didn't pay a whole lot of attention. And then I started listening in a little bit more, and she was talking about the importance of attracting capital and investment and rebuilding and what our people were dealing with. And it was Julia Sifridenko, the first deputy prime minister of Ukraine. And, you know, I was just impressed by her determination, her demeanor, her purposefulness and how she explained what was ahead for the country. So, since that encounter, I see her everywhere, you know, in all the important conversations that are happening around the world right now about how to bring this terrible war to an end and how to begin the process of reconstruction. There she is, negotiating with governments, negotiating with business leaders on bringing investment in. So I can't claim to know her. As I said, you know, you know, encounter with her was, she was sitting on one couch and I was sitting across the hallway or across the sort of aisle, you know, on the other side. But you do realize that people who have this enormous responsibility are, you know, they're real people. You know, they're dealing with real issues, real challenges. And it's been inspiring to see how she's navigating the corridors of private and public power, trying to rally support for the important work of rebuilding the country.
Well, maybe there's a chance to have her as a podcast guest in the future. I'm really excited to build this format together with you. And Leaders Unplugged is not just a title. It's what we really, you know, set out to do here. And it also means that we're talking about some things that are maybe a little bit uncomfortable, maybe a little bit uncertain, and sometimes speculative. So I'm going to ask you now as a leader, what do you think people with responsibility should pay attention to in this year that started, as you said, with more news, more impact than most, I think, in the Western world were able to digest? Is there something of a orientation that you can give fellow leaders who are listening right now?
I think we have a tendency to focus on what is right in front of us. Right? That's why CEOs tend to be so focused on the next quarterly earning. That's why the meeting that we're preparing for gets the attention. We think about the next upcoming election. And of course, what is in front of us right now is this dramatic rupture in the transatlantic relationship. Right, so we're having this conversation just a couple of days after the dramatic Oval Office meltdown involving President Trump and Vice President Vance and President Zelensky of Ukraine, and the realization.
And probably the deputy minister that you just mentioned was also.
I think
she
was in the room. There's one picture where you can see her right there. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, and European leaders are in a hurry now trying to figure out what it means if, at least for the time being, America cannot be counted on as an ally, as a partner, as a source of security in Europe, right? And so that is all consuming for so many political leaders in Europe, business leaders in Europe, but of course also for citizens, right? For many folks who might be listening to this. And yet there's so much else happening. There's so many other places. You know, I've been having conversations recently about India. You know, wonderful conversation with India's ambassador to Switzerland and a couple of Indian business leaders. And the sense of momentum, the sense of shared purpose, the feeling that domestic politics, international politics, demographics, all of that aligns to enable India to return to the place that it occupied in the 18th century, right? India used to account for a quarter of world GDP, and you know, as did China in the 18th century. And it's been very much a 20th century phenomenon that it hasn't played this sort of dominant economic role, right? So the rise of India is happening, and it doesn't occupy the headlines as what's happening right now in transatlantic relations, but is incredibly consequential. At the same time, the demographic explosion in Africa, that just, you know, hundreds of millions of young people, the fact that so much of the growth in the working age population is going to be on the continent, that so many of the resources that the world needs to accelerate the energy transition are there. So there's this contrast between the sort of politics that demand our immediate attention and these long-term trends. So you're asking me about 10, 15 years from now, it will be a world. I don't know what will have happened with the transatlantic relationship, but I know that India is going to be more important. And I hope that way more people are going to pay attention to Africa and the business opportunities there, and more generally what's happening at the continent. So making sure that we don't lose sight of these long-term transformational trends while we're focusing on what is immediately in front of us.
Interesting. And there is another question that I wanted to ask you about the future, David, that I learned at South by Southwest from Ipsos, from the people that do surveys around the world the entire year. And one of the futurists that works at Ipsos, I asked him, what's your favorite question to ask a leader? And he said, I ask leaders thinking 5 or 10 years from now, what is something they wish they had a trend line on? So I'm really asking them to become futurists for a moment and select something specific that they wish they would know about now. So I'm turning that to you now. What is something, David, thinking 5 or 10 years from now that you wish you had a trend line on today?
Yeah, let me bring it back to AI, right? Massive investments going into AI, incredible excitement about the potential of the technology. And we're beginning to get questions about, is there an AI bubble? Have folks overinvested in AI? And of course, in some ways, I'm sort of a Mark child. I was in the Bay Area in the late 1990s and early 2000s. I was at Berkeley in graduate school. And I remember, you know, I was a poor PhD student, and all of my friends were at startups and going to IPO parties and having just an incredible life. And then in the early 2000s, I remember once getting an email from a friend, you know, another one bites the dust because she had been laid off from a third .com, right? So I've been through a sort of boom cycle and a subsequent bust before. And so I ask myself that question. So what would I want a trend line on? What really is the impact of AI going to be, not in the short term, but in the medium term, right? When it comes to new technologies such as AI in particular, we tend to overestimate the impact in the short term. Again, go back to what is right in front of us. And we tend to underestimate the impact in the long term. So I would love to know how work has changed, how organization has changed, how communication has changed as a result of AI 10 years from now. And I think if we knew that, we could make better decisions right now about how much we invest and where we invest and how we govern and what safeguards we put in place and how we upskill folks about this. So I'd love to have that window into the future.
And it sounds like strategic foresight will become so much more important for leaders. And I'm sure that IMD is invested in that already, whether it's somebody, an AI teaching you personalized, or you're part of a peer group that builds scenarios together. I feel like there's such a need for, you know, not just waiting for something to come and react to it and get anxious, but to actually start planning and looking for your own future.
Yeah. What is fun about scenario planning, and is often misunderstood, is scenario planning is not figuring out what is likely going to happen. Scenario planning is about figuring out the range of possible worlds that we can imagine. Right? Mm-hmm. Good scenario planning has at least 4 different worlds that you can imagine. And then you think about, okay, what are the implications for our business if this world happens, or if that world happens, or if this one happens, right? So you can do this right now, right? What would the world look like if the transatlantic alliance is permanently ruptured versus if this is momentary and as a result of political change on either side of the Atlantic, the two sides find back together, right? What does the world look like if AI becomes primarily a force for good, drives productivity, growth, inclusion, more opportunities, versus becomes, you know, hypercharges the kind of mistrust that people have in institutions? If you just take these two things, you come up with a nice little 2x2, you have 4 different worlds. What is the impact on your business in those 4 worlds? What decisions would you now make that you would be okay with in any of those 4 worlds, right? Are there things that only make sense if you end up in one of those worlds as opposed to another one, right? That helps you figure out what it is that you should be doing now. And then, of course, what you end up doing is you observe, is the world on the path to box 1, box 2, box 3, or box 4? That's where the value comes in. So you're right, foresight is really important, but it's less about knowing the answer and more about being able to ask the right questions, critically examining what is actually happening, comparing the real world to your theory of the case, if you will. And so at the end of the day, it's actually less about certainty and more about developing the kind of agility, the kind of flexibility that you need to deal with the uncertainty that is out there. And absolutely, that is something that many leaders have to do right now in order to navigate these unprecedented waters.
In all the travels that you just did and all the conferences you attended, did you actually see leaders do that? Was there a moment where you thought, I see some people here were actually much more strategically thinking about the future than I expected.
So I was actually surprised how behind closed doors a lot of politicians and policymakers understand what needs to happen to future-proof their economies, to strengthen their societies. And it reminded me of this famous quote by Jean-Claude Juncker, former Prime Minister of Luxembourg, who said, "We know what we have to do. We just don't know how to get reelected once we have done it." Right? So in some ways, the private discourse and conversation does reflect the magnitude of the challenges. There are a lot of people who understood, for example, the need for massive investment in Europe, or to reduce the regulatory burden, or to compete more vigorously with other parts of the world, right? But the challenge, of course, is how do we get that done? How do we build support for that as business leaders, as political leaders? So, yeah,
it's funny that you say that behind closed doors, you were more impressed by some leaders than what you received from them.
Well, it is this issue of how do I get reelected, or how do I keep my coalition together. But I think it's also because in some of those meetings, you can give longer answers. The questions are a little bit deeper and more thoughtful, right? In that setting, an interviewer is not looking for a quick soundbite that is going to lead to lots of clicks. It's actually somebody who's trying to get deeper insights. And so it is a format, I think, that allows for more in-depth conversation. And I was quite happy to see that many of the people that you sometimes see on TV who give sort of short, canned answers, they think more deeply. So that was reassuring.
Which brings us back to this very podcast and to the finale of our inaugural episode. David, you just recorded what is going to be the second episode of Leaders Unplugged with Sergio Ermotti. Can you give us a little bit of a teaser? You just talked about, there's maybe like some longer answers behind closed doors, but I think this was a very deep conversation. Maybe you have a favorite question that you asked him that you can tease us on.
So Sergio was the CEO of UBS, left that role, but then was called back when UBS took over Credit Suisse after its Swiss rival encountered, very, very serious challenges, about 2 years ago. And so it was a fascinating conversation. You visited us here on campus in Lausanne. We had 400 people in the auditorium, including our entire MBA class. And we talked about this moment for Europe. We talked about financial services, technology, disruption, but also, of course, about, this merger, this takeover of their erstwhile rival. And, these two banks have dominated Switzerland. Like, they are the leading global financial institutions or banks. And, one took over the other. And so he shared candidly about how that's going, anything from sort of technical integration, data, and all of that, to culture integration. And how do you make sure you forge a single entity out of this? So it was a great conversation, listening to him sort of describe that process, how they're doing. But I also got to ask him some questions about his almost 50 years in banking. He started as a 15-year-old apprentice in banking. And listeners should listen and see whether they believe that if given a chance, he would have still wanted to be a banker or a professional football player. He's one of the most successful banking CEOs, and you get the sense that he would have loved to just play football. But a great guy. I learned a lot from him, and I hope our listeners will as well.
What's your secret passion that we will uncover on this podcast?
Well, we'll have to see. I mean, I love people. I love meeting people. I love learning from them. It's such a privilege to be at a place like IMD. Like, every day we get to meet interesting people. We get to listen to them, learn from them. The secret of our pedagogy is, frame an interesting question and get out of the way. I mean, that's you know, we do a little bit more than that, but we really do have the good fortune of meeting really interesting people and seeing them wrestle with fundamental challenges facing their business, their organization, but also fundamental issues that they themselves face as leaders. You know, why am I here? Why am I doing this? Why should people be led by me? These kinds of questions. And it's just a privilege to be in the room for that. And I grow as a result of that exposure. So I look forward to sharing some of those insights and reflections as we go along.
Fantastic. Do you think there is a question that leaders should ask themselves more often?
So when you walk into the building of the business school at the University of Chicago, there's an art installation and it says, why are you here and not somewhere else? And I've always thought this was incredibly powerful. I think every student should ask themselves, like, why am I here? Why am I not somewhere else? Which means, first of all, like, what else could I be doing right now? But also, what is the path that has taken me here? Like, who has lent me a hand? What was the critical juncture? Where did I get lucky? And so I think it's a really, really important question. Like, why am I here and not somewhere else? Why am I doing this and not something else? And am I making the most of the opportunity of the responsibility? So I think it's a really healthy way of reflecting on what you get to do as a leader.
Wow, that's a deep one. And I'm looking forward to asking some of our guests that.
Yes.
David, the last question for you today. You said in the very beginning of the podcast that you're an optimist. And I would love to know, to close us out today, what are you most optimistic about right now?
I'm an optimist for three reasons, really. The first one is I've been incredibly fortunate in my life. I've benefited from so many opportunities. It just leaves an imprint on you that, you know, things work out, that there's opportunity, that you learn, you grow. I think if you're in education, like, you end up becoming very optimistic, right? Like, the whole idea of being in education is to help people get better at something. So you need to have a belief in things moving forward and getting better. I think the second reason is I believe in the fundamental decency of people. I think people want to do the right thing. What has fascinated me in my research is, what are the kind of incentives? What are the kind of environments in which people make bad decisions, or they put short-term interests over long-term opportunities, or they become very selfish, right? But at the end of the day, like, nobody likes hurting others. People want to do well, and so we just need to find the right way of structuring incentives and environments and rewards for them to do that. And then I think the third is, if you just look at the long arch of history, like, you can't help but be amazed by the progress we've made. I gave a graduation. I was fortunate to give graduation remarks to our EMBA program a couple of weeks ago. And again, it was in this moment of sort of doom and gloom. And I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to tell you about all the positive things that have happened over your lifetime. The dramatic reduction in child mortality, the dramatic reduction in the percentage of those living below the poverty line globally, the dramatic improvement in life expectancy of certain types of cancer, for example, the remarkable increase in the efficiency of solar panels, for example, that is now making renewables cost competitive, right? The dramatic drop in the price of communication and shipping containers around the world and all of that. So if we actually take a step back and we look at change that happens over 10, 20, 30, 40, or maybe 100 years, I mean, it is remarkable what we're capable of as humans when we, you know, work effectively in teams through organizations. And so we just need to remind ourselves of that. And sometimes it's two steps forward and one step backwards, but it is amazing what we're capable of doing. It's amazing of what we've done. And I, you know, firmly believe that if we, you know, work together, informed by, you know, strong values or strong sense of purpose with the right incentives, there's just nothing that we're not capable of achieving together.
Wow. What a powerful way to end this first episode. And my ears were perked when you were saying that, because I thought about all the patterns that you mentioned at the beginning, AI, you know, nations separating themselves from each other. And then, of course, Trump, Trump, Trump. And I was thinking, yeah, we can fix this. Even though right now it's hard to even look beyond the afternoon or the day, we can fix this. And thank you for being an optimist, and thank you for being an amazing guest and co-host on this brand new podcast. And I feel so privileged to be in the same room, virtual room, with you right now. And I'm really looking forward to host many, many leaders together. The next episode, as we already teased you on, will be with no other than the CEO of UBS, Sergio Ermotti, recorded live at IMD. And thank you so much, David, for creating this format together between IMD and Remote Daily. And thank you to your team. And these are your last words, David, for today.
I'm really excited about where we're going. I think we're going to have a whole lot of impact together. I hope that we can inspire people. We can challenge them at the same time. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. So I look forward to it.
See you soon on Leaders Unplugged. Thank you.